This is the Modern CTO Podcast.
Hey, buddy, how are you?
Hi.
Are you in Chicago as well?
No, I'm in our headquarters in New York.
Oh, okay, nice. Do you guys have offices in Chicago too, or is that just where Nicole is?
We have an office in Chicago and in Ukraine.
So what is your day looking like today? Like, what are you up to today?
Going to be on a podcast. And sorry.
I love it. No, that was the best answer ever.
Usual, the catching up with the team, making sure things are running smoothly, and seeing where I could lend a hand when needed.
So how did you get involved with technology at the beginning? Did you play video games when you were young, or?
Back in the day, my first video game was probably a Game Boy, a black and white one, which I was begging my parents for and had to pay with my own money, over $100. And my first dab in technology was when we got our computer as a family. Probably I was in seventh, eighth grade. We had a super high speed dial up modem with AOL. And my first entry into real technology was in high school, where someone mentioned I had to choose between different AP courses, and someone suggested taking computer science, which I didn't even know anything about. So I said, why not? And I took a computer science course in Pascal, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the algorithm, problem solving, building the programs. And then after that in college, I wasn't sure what I wanted to, you know, to focus on. And I just fell into computer science. I enjoyed it, and everything else wasn't really my cup of tea. My uncle was trying to get me to become an actuary, and I told him I was involved. So he told me that I have to take like 8 or 10 tests in math, and the first one was calculus. And I took calculus or computer science, and I was like, I don't think so. So computer science it was.
But you ended up, though, in financial software, so.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I still enjoy math, but not to that degree.
So after college, what did you do? Did you immediately start working at Imagineering Technology, or did you have some other jobs?
No, right after college, I started working at straight out of Imagineer. You know, the path that that led me here is I graduated the year of the Twin Towers. It was a difficult year for everybody on many different levels. But one of the effects of Twin Towers was that there was really hardly any interviews happening. Many of the big companies just said we're not capable of handling it right now. So after I graduated, I had really not. Nowhere to go, really, and it was the same for a lot of people. And an acquaintance said, why don't I speak to Mr. Errol Ducey, who's the founder and the president of Imagineer. Speak to Errol, and you know, maybe he has something. At that time, he just started Imagineer 2-3 years before that, and Imagineer was doing whatever anybody needed on anything, more like a consulting. You know, any you needed a program, just build it. And so I spoke to him, and he said he wasn't looking for anybody at the time, but I could stick around. So I stuck around till today. And, you know, that was my first job, and still is.
So at some point in those 18 years, he hired you.
Yeah. He told me that I could stick around for a week or so, see if I liked it. And then after a week or so, he says, okay, looks like it could work. But I wasn't really looking to hire, so here's a minimal salary that he could afford, which was like not even, you know, a college graduate. But I spoke to some family members and others, and they said there's nothing out there, so just continue. So I went back to him, and I said, okay, I'll stick around for a little bit. And he's like, okay, just stick around for at least 6 months. Don't stay for a month and then leave. It's just a waste of everybody's time. So I stuck around for at least 6 months.
Nice. I was actually reading a book this morning. It was my Audible this morning about that as a as working for free as a tactic. This guy wanted to work at a clothing store, and he was in high school, and it was like his favorite clothing store. And so what he did is he just walked in, asked the manager if he could start folding some shirts. And then everyone was like, this is kind of weird, but okay. And eventually, like, we better just hire you. Do you want a job? Because you keep coming here every day and doing stuff, and he got the job. So it's kind of interesting. I like when the worlds connect like that.
Yep.
So yep. What are you really excited about today? Like, what are you guys working on?
What are we really excited about? We're really excited about the technology. In general, another thing that we're excited about is increased growth of Imagineer. You know, obviously, client wins, the appreciation of clients, our feedback from the clients that really drives us. You know, all along our growth, especially in the beginning, first 10 years, I'd say, has really been word of mouth. One client after another was each win was a celebration, no matter how small or how large it was. And regarding technology. It used to change every 2-3 years. You know, we started off in Visual Basic over here at Imagineer, and you know, every 2 years Microsoft would release another version, Visual Basic 4, 5, 6, and that was it. There was not really much going on besides that. But today, it changes daily. There's another platform, another tool, another widget that just never ends, and it's getting faster and faster. I wish they had cloud hosting 15 years ago. It just makes things so much easier than the servers and all the headaches that go with it. You know, we have a great partner with a partnership with Microsoft. All our hosted things are with Microsoft, so they're blazing the way in terms of tech, in terms of compliance, in terms of security. And you know, we view. You know, what excites us is that technology nowadays, a whole ocean of knowledge, and that technology is trickling into Imagineer. We're getting a little bit of it, and we're able to offer it to our clients, you know, via our software, our services, to help them, you know, improve their processes and help them get what they need to be. You know, believe it or not, we still have prospects that use Outlook and Excel to manage things, and it's, you know, they're mesmerized by what's out there. So it's really exciting.
So I like that you've been there a long time. Like, what makes you want to stay?
Mainly, I would say the team. There's two things. There's the team and what we actually do. As I mentioned before, one of the things that I fell in love with computer science was the fact that I could problem solve and write algorithms and figure things out. You know, and I throughout college, I started to see the power behind it. I had a professor that said, here, write code that would emulate a mastermind game. And you had to build mastermind in essence. And within X moves, you had to, you know, make sure that the computer could win. And that was exciting. You know, it was interesting to figure that out. I didn't even know that you could win within X moves. And it was just exciting to figure out the algorithm and implement it and see it work and let others try it. So, you know, that's very exciting. I'm sorry, what was the other part of the question?
I don't even remember myself. But how has your role evolved, like, over the past, you know, almost two decades?
Right. So in the beginning when I joined, I was helping somebody else. We were just building random stuff, as I mentioned before. And then we had our Imagineer right now is we're in the asset management industry, investment management industry, solely. That's what we do. That's where our products shine. We have a website portal platform that our clients use for their investors and prospects, and we have a CRM for them to help manage their clients. So in the beginning, we had one of these random people that came to us was a fund, which is in this industry, and they asked us to help build some product and do things for them. And we were building it, and you know, we said, hey, if it works for one of them, it could work for more than one. So through word of mouth and through introductions and whatnot, slowly we started building it out and getting to where we are today. You know, it was, as you mentioned, that I was here for, you know, from the beginning, which is very interesting. It's interesting to see how, you know, how it evolved. You know, and the name Imagineer was a tagline of, in the beginning, it was, if you could imagine it, we could engineer it. So that's how Imagineer came to play. So it was interesting to see how we evolved from VB6, and then we rewrote our platforms to .NET. And then recently, about a year or two ago, we rolled out our modern web application as well. And that was in Angular. And now that we have APIs and we have hosted databases, and the whole thing is just fascinating to see, you know, from what it was to where it is today. It's just, I'm lucky to see that and have that appreciation. You know, people that are graduating now, you know, they expect, you know, they expect everything to be instant. They expect everything to just work. They expect everything to be fascinating. But to see where we have gone, you know, I can't even imagine what we used to do 15 years ago before the days of Google, being able to find the problem solve. We actually had to break our heads and figure things out. It took days, and it's just fascinating to see the change and the shift.
So is most of your team remote, or do you have people in New York too?
We have our primary development team is remote in the Ukraine. We have our product managers and project managers and support and client service in New York, and we have some guys in Chicago for support, sales, CEO. So we have some people scattered around. Our main focus is the team. So therefore, if we had some situations where people said, hey, you know, we would like to move, like to look, you know, for personal reasons, whatever it may be, or for whatever it may be, they wanted to move other places, we said, no problem. Our main focus is keeping the team together and making sure that we're going all in the same direction. So we have people that move to Poland, Jordan, we have people in Israel, we have, you know, around random places. So it works.
That's pretty great. What's some of the things that you've learned as far as managing a remote team?
It's a challenge. you know, over the years, what I come to appreciate is the cultural difference. You know, what I may think, or what people think here in let's say New York, is different than what people think in other places, other countries, and other cultures. What may mean something to me may not mean anything to them. And what I might say that might be totally understood differently to them. Priorities, you know, what's a priority for us might not be a priority for them. What is not a priority is a priority for them. So it's interesting to see how to get two teams together to work and to make sure that everybody's focused at the end game with a clear understanding of what we need to get to and what's a priority, what's not a priority, and how to get there. So on one hand, it's fantastic. The team there is zero complaints. They're really great. Many of them have been with us for 10 plus years. Some came to New York and relocated in New York. We have people here that are living in the United States now. They've been with us for 10 plus years, and it's fantastic. But on the other hand, it's for anybody that wants to have remote teams and stuff, it's a challenge. It's great that we have the tools that we have now, such as Skype and video and things like that. But back in the day, it was just IM, and it was much more difficult. But still, there are challenges in terms of making sure that the teams could click, because if they don't, then it's a big problem.
I remember the IM days.
Yeah.
So do you just, like, how do you handle that specific issue of prioritization? Is it just communication, repeated communication? Do you do stand-ups? Like, how do you organize the work?
So our head of development is here in New York. She's her name is Elena. She moved from Ukraine to New York. So that's been tremendous help. She moved here a few years ago. Tremendous help that she was here. Before that, I used to speak with her, and she would help, you know, in terms of like manage the team, break out the work that needs to be done with the developers and QA and whatnot. But now that she's here, it's more, you know, us meeting here in New York, and then she has the stand up with the wider team in terms of breaking out on a daily schedule of what's, you know, what's to be done for the week and what we're behind on, and then we just catch up afterwards. I do get involved when necessary. If there's something a little bit more complicated or questions or whatever it may be, we might have a session or one-on-ones with the developers, but that's how we operate currently.
Do you get to spend a lot of time with the customers?
Back in the day when we were much smaller, it was just Errol and I. We would go to clients' offices, hear them out, help them do whatever they need to do, which was fantastic because that really helped drive innovation. It helped drive an understanding of their business. Understanding a client's business is critical. Without it, it's almost impossible to do anything. And you could have a beautiful product, but if you don't understand the client's business, it doesn't work. That's another challenge also about the remote teams. Remote teams have a understanding of the business on a slightly less level than the people actually working with the clients on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, have you done any like writing or speaking at conferences?
Currently, no. It was mentioned, people mentioned internally that, you know, I should speak about some of the things that we've done, how we migrated, some of the things that we built, how we built it. We've done some very interesting things, but just focused on the day-to-day, making sure that we're all moving in the same direction.
I think if you put some time on that, like you just carved out like some time to work on that, that you would find it very rewarding personally.
I would agree. I used to teach at Brooklyn College in New York, couple of courses here and there part-time. They got rid of all their part-timers, so there goes that. They only kept their full-times because they were cutting whatever, but it was rewarding. So I do see that.
Well, I encourage you. I don't know why I'm encouraging. Well, I guess I do know why, because it's like there was like 2, 3, 4 years ago, I hadn't done any writing really or any speaking really. And when I started to do this regularly, I found it surprisingly rewarding. Because it's like you share a story or you share something and you just think it's like, oh, this is just what happened. But then people will come like out of the audience or out of the group and say, oh, that was, you know, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm currently in a similar situation. And I found some very useful tidbits. Just, it's a good piece of life. Maybe that's why you're on the show today.
Maybe
just a little reminder. So, you know,
stay tuned.
I love it. I look forward, like in LinkedIn next year, it's like most popular speaker of 2021 and it's you. It'd be great to see. Yeah. So, you know, as we started to wrap up here today, you mentioned, so you got a remote team. We talked a little bit about, you know, how you keep them focused and rowing in the right direction, that you're spending a lot of time on that. But if you could go back to yourself 17 years ago, when you were first getting that free job, what sort of advice would you give your past self?
That's a good one. I think, well, one thing for sure I would say if I was able to go back was to learn, maybe take courses, maybe speak to people about people themselves, psychology, how to deal with people, how to interact with people, how to work with them. Because, you know, at the end of the day, without the team, without being able to work with somebody, it's impossible. if one person is missing in the on the ship, the ship sinks, at least here in Imagineer. So and then that's truth everywhere. And to be able to pick up those people skills, yeah, you could read a book here and there. Somebody gives you a book, oh, read the, you know, seven effective things or whatever it may be. You know, to pick that up early on in the career is invaluable. It helps not just with you know, work, but it helps in general in life. You know, we're always surrounded with people. We have families, friends, colleagues, coworkers, and there are many difficult situations that come up, whether in business or in personal, that, you know, how to talk to somebody, how to listen to somebody, how to understand the other person. It's you know, I can't stress it enough that it's absolutely of great importance to have that skill. So that would be one skill. The second thing I would probably say is, you know, try to get experience as much as possible. Yeah, going to school is very nice, and having the, you know, graduate degrees and all the other degrees is very nice, but having the experience of working in the actual field, you know, the textbooks can't teach you every scenario. You know, they can't teach you when the market crashes in 2008, 2009, and it was very rough for us, how to stick together, how to overcome it. They can't teach you when, you know, the server blows up and now you're down and nobody knows where anything is and it's chaotic. You can't work, you know, there's no textbook, or you have somebody that's going through difficult moments personally, or he has difficult things that he's trying to struggle with and he can't work effectively. You know, how do you stay next to him and help him? You know, you mentioned mentors. And, you know, one of the critical things that I learned in the past, and I think that anybody could do it even 17 years back and just look out for these types of things, is, you know, I realized early on when we were working late nights, Sundays, very frequently, you know, I would be working, coding, doing something, and Errol would come to me and say, hey, you're staying late? All right, I'll stay late. And many times, I don't know what he was doing for like 2 hours when he wanted to go home, but he would always stay late. Very rarely did he ever leave, and over the years, and even when he did leave, he would always say, hey, Avi, I have to leave. I'm so, so sorry. Is it okay? As if he had to ask me. And many times he would stay until I was ready to go. And or he would just pull up a chair next to me and say, okay, just let me watch. And maybe give me some tidbits if he understood what was going on, or just ask questions, just kept it going. And that goes a long way to know that someone's next to you, and, you know, to look for those types of people while you're working, to stick to them and to learn from it. Because, you know, as the team grows, we started from a handful of people and now we're 60, 70 plus. It's easy on a day-to-day basis to lose sight of things. It's easy to get lost in the fire drills that happen, and it's just going to happen, and every company has it. It's easy to get lost. But if you stick together and say, you know what, no job is too small. Everybody's relying on me and I'm relying on them. And how do we just make sure we row in the same direction? If two people, let's say, are shooting an arrow and they're inches apart, you know, they're aiming in two different directions, but inches apart makes no difference at that point. But where the arrow lands 100 yards away, it does make a difference where the arrow lands. So if everybody just makes sure and watches out for each other, it goes a long way to make sure that everyone's going in the same direction.
Boom. You nailed it, man. That's awesome. You definitely got to go out and speak more. People want to hear what you've got to say, especially like how you wrapped up there answering that question. That was like such good information. It's just like, you could just tell that insight was backed with raw experience. So, yeah. I mean, I really appreciate it. And I'm so grateful that you took time to come hang out with us today and be on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Is there anything else we didn't get out that you wanted to cover?
Just maybe one more thing, maybe just as a suggestion for folks.
Go ahead.
You know, one suggestion that I would have probably is, you know, especially for software development firms, is to use their own software internally. We use our platforms internally, both for our website and for our CRM and such. And it's critical. It drives a ton of innovation. You get to see a little bit of what the client feels. You know, yeah, that button there does make a difference, and it does, you know, save headaches, and how come they cannot do it this way, the way they want it, and to really understand it through the eyes of the user. And as firms get larger, it's easier to get stuck in the mud. It's easier to just get stuck on, you know, fighting the fire and getting stuck. And subconsciously, I would say, the firm just goes on a cruise control. You know, they're like, okay, let's, what do we have to do today? And you know, to make sure that the team is focused on the bigger picture. Yeah, the daily things are important, but just make sure that the team is focused on the bigger picture, and brainstorming and trying to come up with innovative ideas and saying, where are we headed? Where is the industry headed to? And where do we want to be when that industry gets there? Critical. So try not to get lost in the small details, which are important, but there are other things also that we should focus on.
Dude, I love it. You're awesome. Hey, next time I'm out in your area, I've got a lot of friends that I visit that area quite a bit up in New York, like between New York City and Manhattan, and then like Westchester. I've got family all around there. But the next time I'm out there, I'll let you know, and maybe we'll meet up, grab a tea or a coffee or something, say hello.
Sounds fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you so much,
man.
Thank you
for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.